Okay, welcome for the weekly English medium discussion. Today, fairly, we have a good attendance, good population. And to before going to the appointed topic, I would like to open the floor for any other interview reports or any other suggestions or comments. We'll take a few minutes and then we'll go to the main theme. If you have anything like that, please express for the sake of our discussion. So that means we can directly go to the Magandhiya Sutta. That is in the Khuddaka Nikaya, chapter 8, Attakavagga. It's usually all the deep suttas are recorded here in an archaic language, and therefore there are a lot of commentaries and translations. So I get the Buddha Jayanti translation in the Sri Lankan tradition, and we have Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation and many other. So we will discuss them according to the progress we had already in the last week.
So I'm going to begin from the verse. Why should that Brahman assert it's true? Or with whom would he dispute its false, when for him there is no equal and unequal? With whom would he engage in debate? So here again, the Buddha is refining our understanding of mana, or conceitedness, this conceited nature. And the core element of conceit is, there is a concept of I am, and then I am better than, I am equal to, or I am inferior to. So the Buddha is always tackling this as being the core of the core of our delusion, the delusional nature of the world. And then on top of this core, we pile on things like defilements. So this is the core on which the views and other things will be built later on. And so it is true. It is true means, like, for instance, that I know it's true. I know better than you. Or even if I'm inferior, well, I know that I'm inferior to you. But I still feel that I had a neighbor whom I lived with next to in my village, that they were just sort of, that they were proud to be, she used to say she was very proud to be following the old ways. That was her thing. She used to follow the old ways, and like the whole house was falling down around her. And she wouldn't do anything, you know, to maintain or keep up the house or something like that. But she was following the old ways, is what she used to say about it. It was a kind of an inferiority complex in a weird way, you know. But she was kind of superior about her being inferior. So why should the Brahman assert it's true, or with whom would he dispute its false? So it's this quality of the mind where whenever we come in to meet another person, we are immediately assessing ourselves relative to that other person. Am I inferior or superior to this other person? Or even if I'm inferior to this other person in some way, I hold a superior this way, this particular characteristic. You have to see that this is a quality of the mind, a characteristic of the mind, that it is always judging and it is always positioning itself. And this goes on as well. You can see this all the time in the animal kingdom. You know, two dogs, they meet, they're sizing each other up, and they're trying to order themselves in a way. You know, who is the superior and who's the inferior? And there can be a lot of tension and stress until this question gets resolved. And the same all the time. I see it with the monkeys around me. They're really very, aggressive or...
Conceited.
Yeah, they're very conceited is the word, but it's a very strong force with the monkeys to assert who's the boss and who's inferior and who, what's the order. And I remember seeing one small little baby monkey, and it was walking along with its tail straight up, which is kind of a dominant signal. And the older monkeys were pulling the monkey by the tail. It was very jokey and funny. But it was like saying, you're a little fella, you shouldn't be going around with your tail straight up. And this was a little baby monkey, so it knew no better, but it was funny to see,
Monks also the same.
Yeah, I mean, if we don't have ranking according to Vasa, it would be complete chaos.
Even with Vasa ranking, they know how to make chaos.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Monks and monkeys living in the forest, it's a phenomenon.
Yeah. So this ranking according to Vasa is incredibly important, actually, to us to arrest
to them. Sort it out. But yeah. To create the problems, that too also can create a problem. But the sorting out the problem, you have to say, hey, you are junior to me, shut. But the creation happened due to that itself.
Yeah, but it's the worst, it's the lesser of two evils. I'd rather have Vasa than no Vasa. then it'd be totally crazy stuff. So when for him there is no equal and unequal, with whom would he engage in debate? So this is the point, and it's not that the monk sees no equal or unequal. In fact, it's a quality of wisdom to be able to discriminate, to be able to distinguish between two things that are different, and to acknowledge that we're all in fact individual. So an enlightened person understands as such that there is equal and unequal. It's just not a judgment that they're carrying in their head about it. They are not going to perceive themselves as superior or inferior because of equal and unequal. It's more akin to this idea that we fare according to our karma. So sometimes you see somebody who's in a beautiful, luxurious car, and you say, wow, that's really superior or something like that. And then, maybe they've just worked very hard to have that car, and maybe it's not something I value myself. I prefer to sit back and relax and be driven around in a bus, So I don't have that value in that object, and I don't put in the time and I don't put in the effort. So, why judge people who do have that, So that's just an example, but it's not that monks don't see equal and unequal. It's just they're not trapped by it. They're not bound by that judgment, by that conceitedness. And it's not that they're ignorant of it. It's that they're seeing through it with wisdom. And this is really a force driving the world, and to have mastery over this conceited nature of the mind is to be really, really liberated from a great great impediment, a great suffering. So then now the Buddha starts to move in this section of the next section into more qualities of a monk, because the Buddha isn't just somebody who points out the flaw or the problem, but he also points out a solution to the problem that he's identified. So the verse 10 is, having left home to roam without abode, in village the Muni is intimate with none, void of sensual pleasures, without preferences, he would not engage in contentious talks with people. So here again, the Buddha is referring back to the purpose of this whole conversation was that Magandhya wanted to offer his own daughter in marriage to the Buddha, and the Buddha was rejecting it. So here he's saying that an enlightened person or a monk is void of sensual pleasures, without preferences. So he doesn't look at their daughter and think, this is somebody that kings would like to marry, and this is a superior person and all the rest. He's like, he's free from these preferences, and he's free from the attraction of sensual pleasures, because he has left home to roam without abode. So this is, we describe in Buddhism, going from home to the homelessness. And to be a monk is to give up the nest, a nested life. So we go from alio to an alio, to a life without an abode. And this is a profound quality of the mind. Again, we like to be nested. We like to be surrounded in the familiar. We like to have everything we want and at ease. And as a monk, you know, you have to kind of put these things aside and put up, like, see into the nature of the mind, that it to not have a home is a great challenge. And to be not intimate, meaning like to be sort of the in-group as such, to be in with your clan and in with your family and in with your group, to be familiar, to be bound to people. Like a monk lives a life that's a little bit more aloof or withdrawn from the pleasures of close association with others. So we try to keep close association with our own mind, and this means that we're not involved in the affairs of others. I asked an old Burmese meditators, I used to ask older meditators, people who had been meditating 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, how did they differ from their own cohort or their own family? And one of the consistent things you'll find is that they say, oh, you know, they gossip too much, or they're too involved in their family, their grandkids' affairs. They worry too much about other people. And, you know, I don't have that interest. I keep to myself a little bit more. You know, it's not that I don't love my family, but I'm not stuck in all their affairs. And, you know, so this is the kind of mentality that you find with people who have developed and cultivated wisdom, that he would not engage in contentious talks with people. And it tends to be contentious. So gossip very quickly turns to this kind of contentious quality. Oh, have you heard the news? You know, have you heard the news? Like, it always means something negative. It's contentious. Like, we put more value into dispute or argument or trouble than we do into, like, wholesome states of mind. You know, it's more intriguing to know about, I know something about that person, and, they want to know the gossip. It doesn't mean good stuff. It's mostly negative. So you try not... You know, you try to see through that kind of entertainment quality of news. News is entertainment, really. And it's not about facts. It's about opinions.
Nothing new.
Yeah.
In news.
Yeah, and it's age old. It's the same, always the same. And it's the story is the same. It's not that the facts are changing. The facts change. In fact, they're always different.
Parables.
But the story is overlaying the facts is the same. So maybe those are two verses you want to address, 9 and 10.
So these numberings are different here. Okay. But anyway, the early one was in the conceit.
Yeah.
Satchanti so brahmano king vadeya. Musativa so vivadeta kena yasming samang visamang vapi natti sa kena vadang pati sangyujjaya. Now he's talking about the ideal monk or an enlightened monk, a rahat. Never say the partner what you are telling is the truth. This is the only truth. You are the only person telling truth. There is no such a thing. Because he is a known person. This is the one and the only truth. There is no such thing. He never say you are lying. Because he knows the other person's mental situation. He is talking what he believes, but it is the truth for him. But the known person knows it is lying, but he never tell the person, you are lying. And no debate. I can disprove you or you are telling nonsense. No. It's useless because he understands the gravity of the situation. If I do not have any relationship or rather superiority or inferiority or equality with you, with what conceit can I argue with him? I am not agree with him, I am not disagree with him. No debate, no argumenting. So this is the way today media provoking some kind of unwanted thing in you, in your mental mind setup, and then going for and against and keep on blah 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 blah. So in Bertrand Russell, he told the creating unknown suffering to him, unfamiliar suffering to him, telling you don't know you are in suffering. I am the only person can bring a message of peace. So therefore understand your suffering and please come to me. I will rescue you. The simple way of the missionary. The worst thing in the human mind. Worst thing in the human mind. Introducing him a way of suffering. Tell you don't know, you are in suffering. Please understand. And I know the answer. Please come to me. I will rescue you. So he says that is the worst thing. So therefore, person who understood has no any fever to correct everyone. They understand why they are talking and why they are adamant with that argument and kind of thing. He never compare him with equal, superior or inferior. Therefore, no debate. That is not telling he is lying. He just understand him. So if that is happening in the classroom, there won't be any clashes. But the thing is, everyone is thinking he is wrong, I am correct. So it is my duty to correct him. Then endless argument, endless. I am no such authority. I know and I am otherwise I'll have the vested interest to correct him. That's the worst thing on the earth. You have your vested interest to correct other people. I hate that kind of people. I would say be mindful and mind your own business. You have no rights. Unless otherwise I offer you, please, can you share with me with this question or this kind of thing? You can come and share. But if someone is coming and telling you are wrong, you have to do this and that, I am telling I am a monk, I am a Buddhist monk. Don't come and poke fingers with me. You are no one. He can suggest no harm. But if he come and telling you are wrong, you this must be there, then this. I am not influencing your psychology. Please don't poke fingers into my psychology. We can be friends. So I was not much clear about this when I was a layperson. Had that been in my mind, I would have become ordained 8 years before. Because ordination is always people poking fingers into your psychology. I hate it. But later when I come here, this is a special place. No one is trying to poke fingers. I mean, if someone come and ask, there may be a minority of people go and so search out and poke fingers into you. Otherwise, we give everyone the chance because we are also beggars. We are in a restroom. I am all beggar. You are a new beggar. You also will be an old beggar at a time. By that time, I would have gone. So likewise, I am very happy about selecting this place. It was a luck by chance. I never contemplated before coming, but I had a gut feeling. And I try my best not to influence, not to poke fingers into others. I don't mind whether he's correct or wrong. As far as my path is not disturbed, I go. No feeling about the family members, no feeling about the disciples, no feeling about the co-practitioners. And I say that if you need, these books are telling the truth. I have no any authority. I have no anything in my gist. I hold it. So that is what the discussions I like very much because anyone can air their views. And we say we are not rushing to say he is correct and he is wrong. Of course, I fight with Buddha Raghita Hamaduru. Sometimes hours we are fighting. But we both know we are idiots. I mean, we are not writing this, but we are arguing. And at the end, we agree to disagree. So that part, I am very happy with the Mahayana tradition. They have debates, they have discussions, and they are fighting vehemently, arguing and kind of thing. It's just for the sake of arguing, not personal. Not that we're telling we are enlightened, not that we are telling no defilements. I mean, you can have the diplomacy, you can have the relationship with others to make use for your benefit. Don't use it as a distraction, use it as a hindrance. It's another individual. Whatever the belief may be, we are maybe eating the same from the same meal. It doesn't matter. So now, after 30 years and 40 years, I feel whenever such a situation happens, people feel like cornered. People feel like lost the relationship. People feel like social distance. People suffer the alienation. Very difficult. But whenever that the distance happens, to cater for that, understand it, you must have a thorough vipassana. You must have utter mindfulness. Know that people are not, usually they are not forking fingers, if you are not. But that is not, they are ignoring you. So you have to understand this is the solitude. So you have to tell whenever necessary you can go and talk with them. But otherwise, mind your own business. And that sometimes feel like cornered, bored, outcasted, like. But if you are mindful, if you prepared mind, I think that is the blessing. Therefore, Corona is a blessing. And this Ukraine war is a blessing. People are very busy. He do not know. They are in the monastery, they don't know. No problem. No one can say, these people are idiots, they are not in the society, they are not fully members like. No one can tell. Because these are this bullshit, unwanted things. The full newspaper, and the radio, and they are really rushing and they are making entertainments. I sometimes look into this entertainment and keep myself updated. And just to see, mind your own business. Don't share with that others. They also can go to the media and get if they need. And shut your mouth up. Be aware of everything, but behave like an idiot. Look at everything, but behave like a blind person. And hear everything, but behave like a deaf and dumbbound. Super means in Czechoslovakian language, good. Super. So it is being expressed, therefore no one is reading these books. Because it won't give entertainment. These books are very hardcore. Just like if you are reading the old Bible, Proverbs in the old Bible. So much of good things. But they are very well known. There's nothing, it is not a property of someone. Everyone's there, but the people wish to have fairy tales. And all the fabricated things and advertisement to advert your mind to particular bullshit. So these are the things, information technology. I hate it. I don't like. So that our body knowledge and the first impression are much valuable than someone is directing with the superior information technology. It's a cancer for me. Because people have good instinct, people have common sense. We have to appreciate common sense rather than this artificial intelligence. So I would say artificial intelligence is unavoidable. Everyone is having. But just keep it out because it is disturbing your mindfulness. So mindfulness brings back to the common sense. So we have to say common sense is the most uncommon thing on the earth. So therefore, conceit-wise, Buddha says, what kind of a debate I have with you? What kind of a disproval I have to? Because I am not comparing it. Then two words. Okampahaya, ano aneketasari. These words are not usually in Pali. they are not well translated. The traditional Sinhala translation says, whenever you see visual objects, it is taking a kind of a sign from that visual object. Keta, it is called a sign, we can say it's called a sign. Accordingly, only perception can happen. Accordingly, you have the only remembering can happen. By looking at, you take a sign. Accordingly, only you keep on you internalizing it, you get it organically connected, and aniketa saryu. But the enlightened being, he just see and give it up. He don't take any sign, any name, any residues. Just see finished. So appear like the floating eyes, not holding into someone, not adverting into someone. Gami akubbam munisantavati. He don't, the lay people take signs, take names, take remembrance and put labels, and that is what you call the village. But the person who is living, all the trees are equal. All the sides are equal. So they are the sides. So he don't care. So therefore, even if he is behaving in the, moving in the village, he just don't take so much of inputs when he was in the forest, when he come back to the forest. So he is, therefore he can't have special desires, especially for the sensual and sexual pleasure. He find everything equal, and therefore he has nothing, this is a better share, this is a lion share, this is a better half. He don't see. Everything he appear like same. So therefore he has no crazy craving for something. So therefore he never debate with people. He contagious. What is the term you mentioned? Contentious.
To be contentious, to fight.
Fight. So that is called debating. Take a stand. He say he listened to the other person. He says, yes, this is this. Oh, yes, it can be. No, no, you are telling that. No, I am not telling anything. You tell. So there is no. The best example the Buddha given, I bought some the musical instruments. I had a bowl. When you hit the bowl, if it is not cracks, it is have the ringing sound. Long ringing sound. What if there is a crack? The ringing tone will be very blunt. So if you have a hard and fast egotistic idea, if someone come and hit you, lot of musics happen. Ringing, keep on ringing. But if you have a broken kind of a egotistic idea, even someone come and hit you, just react, that's it. So Buddha says, kansayata upahata. The vessel, the iron, the singing bowl is broken. If it is so, even if you hit, there's no reverberation. So likewise, you must behave in the village. People come and hit you. People come and see whether you are reverberating. He says, yes, at the beginning it's giving a dumb sound. And then you finish. There's no continuity. Kanso yata upahata. That particular debating, again and again debating, is called contentious. And this is called vigahya janena. Vigahya means always finding a fault grammatically or fact-wise or presentation-wise and making a debate continuous. So Buddha says, as far as I am not taking a stand, earlier I thought that you have to take a stand, you have to fight with others kind of thing, that is your linguists and this is your rhetoricism and kind of thing. But later it says, no, let that bloody fellow to take his own view. You don't care, let him to express it, but don't vigahyavadi. That is telling one after the other. And today's debates in the parliament, debates in the UN, debates in the American Senate, you can see how they are debating and unwanted trivial things, wasting time. And I feel very sorry about these fellows. They are much paid. The space also very expensive. And the time also very valuable. Talking nonsense. So Mahatma Gandhi, have you heard about Mahatma Gandhi? The Indian leader? His house is always full of important people. So he's a very shy fellow at the beginning, at the young age. He's behind the screen and listening. His father also will recognize person. Other people come and talk in nonsense for hours. Behind the screen, he find nothing valuable. So he decided not to talk. And after, till he go to the Africa and see apathy and how mistreat people, he thought speaking, talking is always leading to misunderstanding. But later he understand, if I am talking, I will talk to the point. I will never talk nonsense. No beating on the bush. How do you say?
Beating around the bush.
So he became a world leader because he talked short and sweet, short to the point. And exactly Upandita Sahib. If you are talking, he never repeat. He just give the gist of the word. You have to catch it. And it is really fitting. But if you miss the bus, sorry. Very difficult to follow. But he is short and sweet. He don't say don't talk. He says too pure. Talk short. To the point. And there are such a people, Vigahyavadi, they are not debating each other. So therefore the Buddha is, there's one epithet for the Buddha is Muni, the mute. He never talks. Unless otherwise there is a message. Not saying good morning, goodbye, how are you, hi, no such nonsense. So in the meditation retreats, all the people, whenever they are not talking, they feel quite alienated, they feel unsocial, they feel callous-like. So in the Mahasi system, Goenka system, very serious, no talk. So for the Western people come here and they find the people are angry-like, because no Vigahyavadi. So that's all the translation of this thing. So you may continue if others have no any contribution.
So he wanders detached from things in the world. The Naga would not grasp and assert them. As a thorn-stalked lotus born in the water is untainted by water and mud. Just so the Muni, a proponent of peace, free of greed, is untainted by sensual pleasures and the world. So again, he continues here this description of what the Arahant or an enlightened monk is like, that he wanders detached from things in the world. So detached is the opposite to attached. So normally, you know, the root of suffering is that we have enough, but then we attach and want more. So it's this craving or tanha or attachment to things that we identify with. That's mine, or that's superior, or that's better. And for instance, if you identify with a nation or a place, like you're a proud Sri Lankan and you're walking around Sri Lanka, and you may even though it may be not your exact area or location or house, you still feel like, oh, this is my Sri Lanka or something like that. And you go to a different country.
We call Singhalese Buddhism.
Then you go to a different country, then you kind of look at it as inferior, or it's not as good as our Sri Lanka or something like that. Or that you have an inferiority view, you know, like, oh, you go to this other country and they're very developed and posh and modern or something like that. And you kind of go, oh, we're very backward here. And it's this kind of like, to move detached is to move.
That detachment is not for your development. It is bullshit. That is why we move back. That improvement we don't consider as human, but inside you is not pure. The external is, yes, like heaven. So I have that idea that what you are talking about. When I go to the posh countries and where, people are frustrated and mentally dull and they are not human. World is full of clean streets and the shops and all the kind of thing. But I can see no blood in their face. They are dead ghost-like. So I feel like coming back to... So last 2 years I was so happy not going other countries.
That's great.
Thanks to Corona.
Thanks to Corona, you finally had some sense.
Yeah.
So this wonder detached, or to wonder to be free of attachment. You know, to be free from attachment is a great freedom. It means that you're moving around very frictionless. You know, you're just like a child, and everything becomes. You know, it's just like, oh, that's amazing. And, you know, I can be very appreciative when I move through different places. It's a kind of a privilege to visit places, to visit people. It becomes a privilege rather than I have to judge or assert my status or something like that. You're just move free from attachment rather than just simply detached. It's not a state of being numb. It's a state of freedom and liberty, free from things. The naga. So then, naga is a word that means like a being, like a they're supposed to look like a snake or a serpent, but also naga is a word for a big royal elephant, or a naga can also mean like a monk, again, a superior quality, a superior being, would not grasp and assert them as a thorn-stalked lotus born in the water. So this idea of how the lotus holds up its flower over the water or free from the water, and it's not touched by the water, even though it's born in the water, is this detached, this idea of a detached, like a beauty that is detached from, you know, the muddy water. So here the monk is like a detached flower floating above the muddy water of the pond, and they're not grasping onto things. They're not trying to assert themselves, so they're not trying to push others down or around to assert, oh, I'm important, you know who I am. So, you know, this is they're just untainted from the water and the mud of the pond. Just so the Muni, the enlightened monk, is a proponent of peace, free of greed, is untainted by sensual pleasures and the world. So again, we come back to this theme of sensual pleasures. And to be free or untainted by sensual pleasures is, you know, so there's freedom of sensual pleasures, which means that you have your pick of whoever you wish to have sensual pleasures. Maybe you're a famous, some star or something like that. But freedom from sensual pleasures is the goal of the Muni. So they're not trapped by sensual pleasures. So you know, if you see somebody who's maybe very famous, very attractive, and they have freedom of sensual pleasures, then they're still trapped by sensual pleasures, whereas the Muni is free from sensual pleasures. And they're a proponent of peace and free of greed. And again, a lot of people, sometimes they don't understand that peace is a quality of mind that they need to value. You know, so sometimes you ask people and they say, oh, I would really love some peace of mind. And then you just say, well, why don't you cultivate peace of mind? Oh, no, I don't have time for that. I have other things to be doing. You know, so it's not valued by them. They don't value peace. Instead, they prefer to be in argument and disputation and in the thick of action and important and asserting themselves. And then therefore, they're always at a friction and not at peace. So they're to be a proponent of peace means that you live your words. You live a peaceful life. You don't just tell other people to stop annoying you and stop bothering you. You live a peaceful life fundamentally and free from greed. So greed is like where the quality of the mind, where it bends towards something, it's attracted to something, it wants something. Whereas anger is the opposite quality. It's deflecting. The mind is bending away from the object. It sees the fault. greed sees the attractive quality in things, you know, hatred sees the repulsive nature of something. And so the mind just bends towards his greed and away from his kind of anger. So the mind is not bending backwards and forwards. It's a proponent of peace. It is untainted by sensual pleasures and the world. And here the world is especially the world, the exterior world. So there's an interior world and an exterior world. And whatever is happening externally, we convert that into a kind of a mental reality, an internal world. So we can have mastery over that internal world, but not over the external world. The world will fare according to its own karma. So would you like to tackle that sentence, that stanza?
I like the example, the lotus flower coming from the utter shit, coming from the muddy place, and it's full of thorns, and water is very smelly. But even put little water into the lotus petal, it don't touch. Still the smelling, good smell. And it's above the water level, but still getting the nourishment from the same old mud. So therefore, this is the only thing, evolution, the human can think about. Other never think, out of the mud there can be any smell, good smell. Out of the mud there may be the unsmearing character. So Buddha is giving that. But Buddha is giving that after he showing his own example. It is not a theory. So therefore, we can't, or we may not come up to that level, but how can we measure how much we are day by, how much we are by mindfulness becoming detached? We are anchored in the shit, anchored in the mud, but the product. So this is the research, this is the artificial intelligence, if I am at all. So how can we say we are gradually coming to that detachment? Because people are very ignorant about that. And it's happening painfully slow, whether you are in the correct path or not. So you are always asking gadgets. You are asking your teacher. You are measuring. Because our mind is not geared to see, it is evolving. So therefore, in discussions, what I say is that when you are looking at the breath, for example, if you see the breath is changing, breath is evolving, breath is impermanent, can you appreciate it? Usually in normal meditation says, look at the breath, keep it as much as possible on the breath. Yes, it's okay. But while keeping it, can you see the changes of the breath? Evolution of the breath, metamorphosis of the breath. And when your primary object is evolving, can you appreciate it? Very difficult unless otherwise you have been trained. That means you are progressing. But such a thing are not being taught in our classrooms. So therefore, if you are looking at something, we want to have it like a frescoes, unchanging. So in meditation, if you can appreciate changing, that means you are evolving. Not the object evolving, the symbol of evolving object means your mind is object changing. So later, after long meditation only, you can understand, you see the changes of the object because your mind is evolving. Mind is changing. So we take mind as a hard and fast peg, not to change. So when it is happening, appreciating is theoretically says accepting the suicide. It's called epistemological suicidal. That evolving self, evolving mind, changing mind. No, he says, no, I am the same person. But no, it is always happening, exemplified by the object, changes of the object. And how long it will take you to understand, by appreciating the changing of the object, you are appreciating your changes of your mind. You are facilitating your evolution. So you are, at the same time, you make causes for mind to change and appreciate the changes. Then I am telling you are the best scientist on the earth. So others also can see it, but it's a very slow process.
You have to take a stand. Yes, I am looking at, I am breathing, I am continuous to breathe. And change is happening. Earlier I hate it. Now I appreciate it. So one day you will understand breath is changing because your mind is changing. Jnanancha, jnatancha, ubhopi vipassati. Not only the object, but you can understand the evolution of your mind. So that kind of insight, that kind of introspection, that kind of internal observation, we have that seeds, we have that potential, we have the possibility being a human. But conservative people and samatha people, I would say, it's little maybe contradictory, they don't like, they don't wish to see the changes. So no evolution. They are rotating around the same thing. So changes you can see, how long, even though you take the nutriment from that shit, how the flower going come out of the water level, and when the sun rises, it blooms. So the Buddha says it is an exact, absolute example, but we being monks, we also experience it in a partial way. Day by day, detachment, still we take the nutrient from the same, but we can understand slowly, slowly, we are accommodating the solitude, we are accommodating forest life, we are accommodating my own time, my own peace. And that is never taught in the sociology. It says always you have to be with the family, be with the group and socialization and kind. It's an imprisonment. It's a taxation. It's a kind of a exhausting. So you have to understand. But if you have some other companions also, they are in the same mindset, you are better off. But very difficult. Very difficult to find. They can't keep on appreciating the solitude. They wanted to have that kind of appreciation from others. Then you are losing all. You have to have appreciation within. So that is what we try our best to by teaching mindfulness to children, to let them have, entertained by themselves, rather than from the education, no equipments or luxuries or parents or kind of thing. How much you are an independent? How much you are an individual? You are a full individual. Not always you must learn from the teacher. Not always you must think that the other people are better than you and bigger than you. No. So you have to go below the children and see what the potential they have. But the society is always suppressing them, telling they are young and they don't know and we know and we have to teach them. Not always. Madame Montessori says each and every child come to the world telling I'll be the world conqueror. I'll win the world life. But 6 years' time they become slaves. They become unwanted things on the earth. The mindfulness give full ticket. No, you are also an individual, just like your parents, just like your teacher, just like we give the mindfulness. This is Bhante, yes, this is something in us. You are catalyzing only. So this one is very good with this example of the lotus coming out of the mud and come above the water and radiate so much of perfume and the smell. And even if you put little muddy water, unsmeared. So for that, for the last 20 years, I'm so happy. And so happy, many people understand we need no anything. We need only human. We are human, already born. And one Irish girl wrote, we are born to be free. We are born enlightened. We don't know. Okay? Oh, now it's only 2 minutes available. No, we can have 5 minutes.
So because of view or an opinion, the Veda master does not become conceited, for he does not identify with them. Not led by karma or what is heard, he is not drawn by any abodes. So here again, the importance of views and opinions, that the Veda master, here again, it's a sort of a reference back to the true Vedic master is an enlightened monk. So the true enlightened monk is not tied to opinions or to views, and because they're fundamentally not conceited about things. They're fundamentally not looking to be one up or toppers or I know better than you. So because he does not identify with these views, he is not led, no longer led by karma, meaning like whatever happens to him, he's not reacting to it. He responds to karma. He's not led by karma. He is responding to karma instead, or by what is heard. He is not drawn by any abodes. So again, an abode is a domicile or a place to live or a place to abide. So this person has no more place to abide. So he's free from the attraction of a nest or an abode. Is actually free from these things. So he's not led by kamma, by the conditions, the causes and conditions of life. He's not led by those things anymore, and is free from rebirth. Or what has been heard. He doesn't go by hearsay. He's not drawn around by these attractions of like this is my place, or an abode can also just simply be like a place that's familiar to you or a place you like to inhabit. That's an abode. So you're kind of content wherever you are. You don't need things to be exactly as to your desire as such. So this is a great freedom. You know, it's a freedom from having the world be the way you would like it or wish it to be. And instead, you're just occupying the world as it is. So this is a really great freedom, to be free from views, opinions, to be free from places, to be free from whatever circumstances of life gives you, and not be drawn towards any abodes. You want to comment on that?
Well, there's a word, tammayo. Pali says, na vedago dithya na mutya, na manamei nahi tammayo so, na kamuna no pisute na neyo, anupatito sa nivesa nesu. Tammayo means assuming. Atammeta means unassuming. You have a lot of seen things. You have a lot of hearing, smelling and touching, a lot of experience. And you have comparison, he is better, good or bad, but you are not assuming myself. So unassuming quality is being translated as, assuming quality is called as tammaya. Tammaya means when you are working with mud, you become muddy. When you are working with shit, you become shitty. But if you are tammaya, not even though you are associating, you are not smeared by. You are not assuming by. And Venerable Buddha Rakhita, not Buddha Rakhita, Buddha Dasa from Chaya, Japan, Thailand, he says, if you can put all the Buddhism into one single word, that I call as atammayata, unassuming quality. So Venerable Sariputta says, the diligence, appamada is the single term, if I am to put into the nutshell, atammayada, appamada. So he wrote a book on atammayata. So whatever you have, quality is good or bad, you are not assumed by, you are not assuming it. They come and go. You also have good qualities and bad qualities, and I am not assuming, I am not imposing you any kind of a thing, atammayata. So Venerable Jnanananda took pages to explain monks, what does it mean by atammeta? The Buddha says, we being monks, we are being fed, clothed, and housed, and medicine given by people. Whether we get a better one, or bad one, or good one, it doesn't matter. Everything is, you are a beggar, and you are in a full happiness. And whatever the knowledge you have, you can't compare it with Buddha. So your knowledge is to share with others, but don't claim I am a knowledgeable person, I am a blah, blah, blah. Nothing. Even if you have jhanic experience, don't assume it. Then onward you become shit. That's the worst thing. So therefore the atammayata, unassuming. So when I was, this was the first job I did, I only did only one job. and I applied a lot. So I asked a character certificate from my postgraduate director. He was a Tamil person. He's fairly good with me. He said, I am not going to give character certificate for all the children there. If it is so, I have no, there may be no other job I can do. No, I am not giving. Oh, thank you, sir. No problem. So one day when I was in the office, he called me and got a piece of paper, not a letter heading. He says he is unassuming. He know how to satisfy his superior, so therefore I can recommend him. So I never heard the word unassuming beforehand. After the certificate, I don't have the copy because I gave it to my job. And after number of years' time only, I came to know what does it mean by atammeta, or unassuming. To monks, we must be unassuming. We have nothing to assume, telling that I am blah, 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 blah. Agree? No, he is always assuming, fighting. Only he is the one fighting with me. But I am also assuming at that time, otherwise I can't argue, otherwise I can fight with. So I always look down Irish people.
Whatever makes you fun. Okay, I'll try to get the last verse here.
No, don't go, no? Because that we have to keep it for next week. Sanya virattasa nasanti ganta, sanya vivuttasa nasanti moha, sanyanta dittincha ye aggahesun te gattayanta vicharanti loke. It's a climax. Yeah.
Okay.
So therefore, we are leaving it, and next time also we will. I will try, if possible, the term atammeta. Atammeta, Buddha Rakhita's article, so very, very interesting, and it is never explored. How to live unassuming way. So expecting next week also, please come armed with atammeta. Don't with tammeta. Kamami kamitabbang.